Everybody. We're reading in book 3, the book of the Divine Mother, and we've reached the last canto, the vision and the boon, which is a wonderful kind of climax in the middle of the poem. Last week we came to the end of this first section, in which the mother makes herself visible and palpable to Asvapati. She welcomes him. She calls him son of strength. She speaks of his achievements. What thou hast won is thine. But we saw that she told him, but please don't ask me anything more. She knows what is in his heart and that he wants to call her presence and her power down into the material world for earth and men. But we read this section where she explains to him why it is not time for that to happen. But she tells him, I'm not asking you now to merge into the formless, into the immobile's wide, uncaring bliss. She says, I know that your soul, your mighty spirit, won't be able to accept rest and repose and pure bliss as long as there is suffering on earth, because you have chosen to your soul has been born to share in the burden of the force in manifestation. So she says, don't leave the light to die that the ages have been carrying. Help still humanity's blind and suffering life. She says, your spirit is following a wide, omnipotent urge, and it has witnessed God's parley with the night of unconsciousness, almost non-existence, which seems to be at the basis of this creation. There's been a conversation between the Lord and this night, and your soul was a witness to that. And because it has seen that conversation, this communication, this parley going on, it has leaned down with compassion from its immortal calm, and it's accepted to house desire, the troubled seed of things. So she says, assent to thy high self, create, endure. Cease not from knowledge. Let thy toil be vast. She says, tread still the difficult and dateless path measured for man by the initiate gods. And she promises him, my light shall be in thee, my strength thy force. So she says, don't be impatient. Wait. There's a high, unchanging will surveying everything. Leave the result of all your work and your labor to the omnipotence of that high, unchanging will. And she promises him, all things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. This is a very high command, and one would think that, oh, this is the end of it. Aswapati's power is aspiration and surrender. And the Supreme Grace answers to aspiration and surrender. So now in this next section, we shall see how Aswapati doesn't quite accept what the mother says to him. He wants to explain to her a little bit more about what it's like to be a human being struggling for the divine. You like to join us, sir? Please take a book. There's a seat here. So we're on page 341 at the break. Will you start today, Amitoj?
August and sweet, he sang hushed at that mighty voice. Nothing now moved in the vast, brooding space. A stillness came upon the listening world, a mute immensity of eternal peace. But Aswapati's heart replied to her, a cry amid the silence of the vast. How shall I rest content with mortal days and the dull measure of terrestrial things? I who have been behind the cosmic mask, the glory and the beauty of thy face. Hard is the doom to which thou bindest thy son. How long shall our spirits battle with the night and bear defeat and the brute yoke of death? We who are vessels of a deathless force and builders of the Godhead of the race.
Thank you. That mighty voice is the voice of the Supreme Divine Mother, and it's august, it's majestic, but also sweet. And now it falls silent, and nothing moves in that vast, brooding inner space. A stillness came upon the listening world. A mute immensity of the eternal's peace. It's absolutely silent, vast, like a block of peace. Everything is at peace. Only Aswapati's heart replied to her. It can't keep quiet. It utters a cry amid the silence of the vast. And first of all, he says, how shall I rest content? How do you expect me to go back and be a human being on earth now that I have seen your face? He says, the doom to which thou binds thy sons is very hard. A doom. Here, I suppose he means like a fate. It's a very difficult fate. And he says, thy sons. That means these sons of strength, the ones whose spirit has leaned down in compassion and longed to lift up the race. For these beings, it's very hard to go on living on earth. How long is it going to last, this battle with the night? And we are constantly defeated, and we have to bear this brute yoke of death. A yoke is something that joins us to them, to the fate of mortality. The spirits are immortal and free, but if we are on earth, we have to wear this brute yoke of death. We can't argue with it. We just have to bear it. So we have to bear it even though we are vessels. We contain a deathless force, and we are meant to be the builders of the divine soul in the human race. How long will it go on being like this? So difficult. That's the first thing he says to her. Susmita.
Or if it is thy work, I do below, amid the error and waste of human life, in the vague light of man's half-conscious mind, why break not in some distant gleam of tea? Ever the centuries and millennium pass. Where the greyness is that coming ray? Where is the thunder of that victor's wings?
Let's pause there. Shall we pause there? Shall we pause there?
Okay.
Yes. If we are doing thy work here below in the material world, in the midst of all the error and waste of human life. These are aspects of human life that bother us very much, no? That there's so much error and so much waste. That's because we are living in the vague light of man's half-conscious mind. We don't see enough to be able to avoid error and waste. And we don't know enough to see that perhaps this error and this what we think is error and waste is actually serving some high evolutionary purpose. He says, why breaks not in some distant gleam of thee? Why don't we see a little bit of your light? Why does, like a sun breaking through the clouds, why doesn't some gleam of your power and your presence break in on us in the material world? In this greyness of the ignorance, where is there a ray to show us that you are coming, that you are on your way? Why don't we hear something of the thunder of thy victory's wings? This idea that victory is a great goddess with powerful wings, no? That is embodied in a wonderful statue which is in the Louvre in Paris. Unfortunately, she's lost her head, but she has her wonderful wings.
What is her name?
Victory, from Samothrake. So those wings, if they're on their way to us, they would make some loud noise. We would hear them coming. Where is that thunder of thy victory's wings? Yes.
This line about grayness.
The grayness, yeah.
I have often wondered why the ashram is painted gray.
It's a very beautiful silvery gray.
I had the same question, and then I went inside and I discovered in this gray is green in it. Green is the color of life force. Before it was more blue in it, so I got it as I had the question since long. There's a green aspect in it, so the life force is.
I think somewhere Shirbindo says in the record of yoga that gray is the color of depression and gloom.
But we have gray here. I don't see that it gives depression and gloom. It's nice, almost silver. No? Not cheery.
Battleship gray, didn't they? Battleship
gray. Maybe it's a relic from the world of black and white thinking.
Black and white.
Shall we go on? Yes.
Only we hear the feast of passing days. At length in the open eternal mind, in the open eternal mind, mapped out with a backward and prophetic sight, the eons ever repeat their changeless round, the circles all revealed and ever aspire. All we do, or all we have done, is ever still to do. All grace and all news and is the same. Huge revolutions of the lies, fruitless, jar, the newborn ages perish like the old, as if the set enigma kept its right, till all is done for which the sin.
Through the great realizations which Asvapati has gained in the course of his quest, he has the subtle hearing which can hear the feet of passing gods, the cosmic powers who pass by, do some work perhaps, and then move on. And he has seen, clearly mapped out this plan in the occult eternal mind. He has this backward and prophetic sight which can see past, present and future in one glance. He's understood this whole plan. But he says it seems as if the eons, these huge stretches of time, these kalpas and manvantaras and yugas, they're just circling. There are cycles, and the cycles seem to start with a Satya Yuga, and then they get worse and worse and worse and worse, and then they dissolve in a Kali Yuga. And it seems to go on and on and on. The cycles all rebuild, and they're aspiring for something better, but it seems as if everything we have done and achieved still has to be done again, because everything breaks and then it renews, but it's still the same. This looks like huge revolutions, turnings, no, of a wheel. Here he uses the word Gaia, which is the movement of a huge bird, what eagles and vultures do, circling on the thermals, moving round and round. So that's what life seems to do, and it seems to be fruitless. Nothing new comes out. I think both pronunciations are correct.
Gaia. So the expression in the brain of Gaia and Alka.
Yeah, I think maybe both pronunciations are correct.
So that it's a staircase, like there's a spiral staircase, which then repeats.
There's a way of there used to be a way of transferring money in Europe called the gyro. No? Yeah. So it's something similar, but I what comes naturally to me is to say gyro.
The same thing, gyroscope.
A gyroscope, yes. Yeah. So afterwards we can look in the dictionary and see what it says. So gyre or gyre. Yes. It says gyre, you checked it? Oh, you've got your laptop there. Yeah. Okay, let's say gyre then, we'll note that. So the newborn ages perish just like the old ones did. So it seems as if this sad enigma kept its right until everything has been done for which this scene, this material world, has been made. No temporary solutions. Everything. Mother has said something like that. No? One wins victory after victory, but none of them is final until the real victory is conquered, is achieved. And you remember at the beginning, she said that this enigma, the knot of this enigma, is tied in humanity. Humanity, or this solution, has to be found in humanity. The passage from Agenda, which Ganga Lakshmi posted in this week's news, casts a very interesting light on that that topic. That it has to be done in matter. Yeah. Maggie, you would read?
To return the strength that now reverses form, to faint the light that steals through nature's lips, to scant the joy with which we shibbies our pain. In a brute world that knows not its own sense, fault wrapped upon the wheel of birth we live, the instruments of an impulse not our own, move to achieve with our heart's look for pride, our knowledge, our creations that soothe I. A poor immortal soul in perishing limbs, battle and beaten back, we labor still. Anew, frustrated, spent, we still survive.
Thank you. A rack was an instrument of torture where you used to get tied and then they would stretch you. No? So he says it's our thoughts which put us in tension and pain.
And torture.
Yes. And that's on a wheel, you know, the wheel of birth, yes. Yes. You didn't notice that. That's why when we can release ourselves from our thoughts, we get a sense of peace and ease. But as long as the mind is working, you can really notice it. I'm sure Ganga Lakshmi's noticed it. If you observe your body just by the thought process, what tension comes into all the cells of the body. So we are immortal souls, but we are living in these perishing limbs. So the soul gets foiled, prevented from doing what it wants to do because of this material bondage. But even when we are annulled, wiped out, frustrated, exhausted, we still survive. We may be allowed some rest in the psychic world, but then we have to come back and resume the effort until everything has been done for which this scene was made. Ganga Lakshmi, you would like to read?
In anguish we labor that from us may rise a larger thin man with a nobler heart, the golden vessel of the incarnate truth, the executor of the divine substance, the keeper to wear the earthly body of God, communicant and prophet and lover and king. I know that the creation cannot fail, for even through the mist of mortal thoughts, infallible are the mysteries set, and through necessity done, the garb of chance, hidden in the blind shift of faith she keeps, the slow calm logic of infinite space, and the angelic sequence of its will.
Thank you. Aswapati knows why we are laboring and suffering. It's so that a higher race of humanity will arise with more vision, larger seeing man, with a nobler heart, whose body will be a golden vessel of the incarnate truth, the truth embodied. That one, that larger seeing man or human being, will be fit to carry out, to execute the divine attempt. And he will be equipped, he'll be fit to wear the earthly body of God. And that body will be the body of a communicant, one who is in constant communication with the divine, one who has the all-seeing gaze of the prophet, but also the beautiful body of a lover and the powerful, mighty body of a king. So he shows the mother that he has this knowledge, and he knows, he tells her, I know that your creation cannot fail because you are taking your mysterious steps even through the mists of mortal thought. And though, this is interesting, these four lines, though necessity dons the garb of chance. Necessity is what has to happen, what's inevitable, predestined. We can say fate in a way. So there is a predestined necessity coded into this creation. But it wears a disguise, it wears the garb, the clothes of chance, so that there's an appearance that things happen unpredictably, unexpectedly. Several places Sri Aurobindo brings these two things together, that our lives in the world seem to be governed by these two things, these inevitable things that have to happen, and we think that we can predict what will emerge, but something unexpected intervenes. Seems to be chance. But he says, hidden in these blind shifts of fate, when it looks like fate is going in one direction and then suddenly it turns and goes in another. Necessity, she keeps the slow, calm logic of infinity space. Every one of these steps is necessary according to the logic of infinity. And the inviolate sequence of its will. The will is for certain things to be happen. These steps are necessary, and they're the inviolate sequence. A sequence is one step after the other, and these steps happen just like that. Inviolate. Nothing goes wrong. Nothing is nothing is a wound or a damage to the unfolding of that will. Very difficult for us to accept from our perspective, no, because we don't have that vision that sees how all this is happening.
Sharada, I want to tell you one question. This passage, when I read, is for me some part of sacrifice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But when Margaret shows the film of Spirit, I understand. I want to know what is the true sacrifice. I understand, I have incredible experience. And suddenly, through this understanding, I understand much more in Savitri.
Yes.
It's very, very, very important.
Sadhava, inviolate means actually that there cannot be a wrongdoing, it's just the way we perceive it. Okay. That's what it
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that question. I don't know how to answer it. I only know that here Sri Aurobindo says that through this play of necessity and chance, the sequence of whatever needs to be done to fulfill the logic, the infinite logic and the supreme will happens.
Deep inside we know the wrongdoing, we do something on purpose. I understand my own question more better because I feel
to me, this passage is the one, the answer to anybody who's feeling cynical or discouraged about things.
Yes.
Because he's told, you know, we're in anguish, but we're laboring, but we're going to make it because we have faith. So no matter what hole you might be in.
Yes, it's something like that. In several places in the poem, Sri Aurobindo gives us this assurance. And it doesn't depend on you people. My mother has also told this to Prem Malik early in the history of Auroville. He asked her, does it depend on us? And she said, fortunately not. Therefore we can laugh, she said. But there may be all kinds of small vicissitudes and things that happen in between that eventually probably all that sums up to nothing, and the inviolate sequence goes on.
That the thing in this context is also important, the surrender is so important, in our attitude when we are here, so that the divine can, an opening to them, so that the divine can best work out.
Inviolate also means inevitable here,
huh? Inviolate, it really means it's not violated. It's not, it can't be spoiled or broken.
Changed.
Or changed.
No, that's your dictionary today.
But she said it's pretty much it. Not violated, inviolable, inviolate, free from violation, intact,
mm.
by nature, safe from violence or profanation, kept sacred, inviolable and inviolate.
Mm.
I always have in my head not to be changed. That's what it is.
Not to be damaged or spoiled in any way.
It cannot be violated.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Okay.
Murugan, would you read?
All life is fixed in an ascending scale, and Adam in time is the evolving law. In the beginning, he prepared the soul, the strange, irrational product of the mind, this compromise between the beast and God, is not the crown of thy miraculous world. I know that shall inform the inconscient self, at one with nature and at height with heaven, a spirit vast as the contained sky and swept with ecstasy from invisible forms. A God come down and greater by the fall.
Thank you. Thank you. Like with a seed, you know, you have a small seed, and out of that seed will grow a tree. So all the information for growing a tree is there in that little, almost imperceptible beginning. So he says it's like that. Everything is already coded in. Hmm? So all life is fixed in an ascending scale, all these different steps that it will follow, and that law of unfolding, one step giving rise to the next one and the next one and the next one. It's an inviolate sequence. It can't be interrupted. It's adamantine. So adamant, in one place he says that nature has to hew her way, cut her way through adamant. Adamant is, a Greek word for the hardest form of substance. So it can be diamond, mm-hmm. and it can be steel, I think, also. Something very, very strong, adamant. But we use it in a psychological sense, of somebody who won't change their mind. No, I'm adamant. I won't. No. Yes. So here he says the law is like that. It's adamantine. It is not going to be changed or modified in any way. And this is because in the beginning is prepared the close. That's why this flow of necessity is so powerful.
Isn't there in the Bible, and God's will be done by King Solomon?
Yes. So this human race, this strange, irrational product of the Maya, we think we are so rational, but we are not at all. And how can even irrationality emerge out of this mud of matter? It is strange. This compromise between the beast, the animal life, and the divine life. This strange mixed product, which is humanity, is not the crown. This can't be the fulfillment of thy miraculous world. He says, I know that the inconscient cells of the animal body are going to be informed. He's using this word in a different way from the way we normally use it when we say, oh, we have to keep everybody informed. It's communicating, sharing. He means, and he uses the word in this way in several places, also in the Life Divine we have come across it, where it means formed from within. So the inconscient cells are going to be informed, they're going to be inhabited and shaped by a spirit vast as the containing sky. A spirit that's swept with ecstasy from invisible founts. So this inconscient cells of the human body is going to be informed by a God, a divine being who has come down and who will become greater by that fall. As the idea that, gods only fall or angels only fall because they've done something wrong. But like with Asvapati, if they accept, yes, let me go and participate in that state of ignorance and imperfection, dominated by matter, subject to death. One of the fundamental threads which runs through this poem is that the God who comes down becomes greater by accepting the human fate.
Sharavan also wrote it so nice in the talks of Kiyotyoshi with the Veda knowledge, that this process is the Agni. When we aspire, there comes this inspiration, this support to connect this higher and the lower one, and we will proceed this happiness and immortality and ananda. That is for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
Yes.
Support, yeah.
I think this is the in Sri Aurobindo's symbol we can see many things. But this is the process that I see there. It's the process of the Vedic sacrifice, the interchange between the higher and the lower. And when we aspire, a response comes and helps us to grow. But the other thing is also true, that what comes down becomes greater by that interchange. Yes, that truth knowledge is always the same. Gets expressed differently at different stages of the evolving process.
He synthesizes the Vedic knowledge with like divine, with Savitri, with everything. And everything is the same.
So Asvapati expresses his faith in this process. Even he says, I know. He has the knowledge. And then he shares with us the way in which he has this knowledge. He's had a wonderful vision. And Dhanalakshmi, would you read?
The power arose out of my slumber state, abandoning the tardy blink of the hour and the inconstant blink of mortal sight. There where the thinker sleeps in too much light and intolerant flame, the lone all-witnessing eye, hearing the word of fate from silence heart in the endless moment of eternity, it saw from timelessness the works of time, overpassed where the leader.
The first sentence of it, why he used the cell as a single form?
Yeah, it has a slightly different suggestion.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the cells of the body.
Yeah.
It means a little room. And it's a little room where a prisoner is kept in a cell, in a prison. Or it can be in a monastery, a monk's cell, or a hermit may make a cell for himself in the hills. So perhaps both those ideas are there. This power is imprisoned in the sleepiness of matter and of the body. Out of that sleep state, a power has arisen and flown away. It's escaped. It's left the rule of time, the tardy limp of the hours which goes so slowly. And it leaves the mental state, the inconstant blink of mortal sight. We don't see things steadily, no, we're always blinking our eyes. So it goes to a region where the thinker, the thinking part of us, falls asleep because there's too much light. It can't see there. Instead, the consciousness which is awake there is a lone, all-witnessing eye, a single consciousness seeing everything. And that is burning, blazing. It's intolerant. It will destroy anything impure and inconstant and imperfect. So that power he was identified with was in that state, the lone, all-witnessing eye, and hearing the word of fate from the very core of the silence in the eternal, in the endless moment of eternity, beyond time and space. But it's watching the works of time, seeing the manifestation from this state of timelessness. So he's left behind, he's overpassed the leaden formulas, the heavy, constricting constructions of the mind, and the obstacle of physical space, mortal space, has been overpowered. And there he has a vision, the unfolding image. It's the works of time. He's seeing the unfolding of the works of time. And it's showing what is going to come, what has happened in the future.
A power.
The power of his consciousness that has left the body and gone into this state beyond manifestation. So then he describes what he sees. Who's sitting there at the back? Larry. Larry.
A giant dance of Shiva tore the path. There was a thunder as of worlds that fall. Earth was overrun with fire and the roar of death, clamoring to slay a world his hunger had named. There was a clangor of destruction's wings. The Titan's battle cry was in my ears. Alarm and rumor shook the armored night. I saw the omnipotent's flaming pioneers over the heavenly verge which turns towards life, come crowding down the amber stairs of earth. Forerunners of a divine multitude. Out of the path of the morning star they came into the little room of mortal life.
Thank you. Sorry? Yes, a world that the hunger of death has made this world. It's one aspect of our material world that everything is running down and subject to entropy and dissolution. And even at the life level, what we see is this hunger, the eater eating. Is eaten, no? All this mutual devouring and destruction is going on. So it's as if in this moment, what he's seeing now, when Shiva is dancing his dance of destruction, it's as if earth is overrun with fire and the roar of death, and it's death who's clamoring, he's making all this loud noise, roaring. He wants to destroy this world that his hunger has made. It's a period of great destruction and upheaval.
Are these flaming fires, is it avatars or ghosts?
I remember when Uda Pinto from the ashram came and visited us here, I think it must have been April 2004. He said he had asked this question to the mother. He had said, "Look, where are they?" "No, I don't see them anywhere." These people. I don't know, don't remember what she answered to him, but one has to have the eyes to see, no.
But we had here just before the sons of strength, no? To
yes.
Get them. No, I think it could be this.
It's crowding.
Yeah, there's so many of them coming. Yes. Yes.
Do you know when this was written? Is it after the Second World War?
I think this part one, according to what Nirod tells us, it was complete by 1944. So the writing of most of book two and book three went on during the war time. Yes, yeah, exactly, showed what would come. But he says in that moment of that terrible destruction, these great souls are coming, immortals, flaming pioneers. And in, you know that earlier prophecy which is there on page 55, where he says it's when darkness deepens, strangling earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind, the physical mind, is the only lamp. Then secretly, the transcendent, will, like a thief in the night, will creep in and mount his throne, take up and rule.
They tell me as a Superman, I think, was like officially 1969, no?
Yeah, 1st of January 1969, Superman consciousness. Descent of the Superman or manifestation of the Superman consciousness. Mother gave a message. And just 3 months after that, she gave a message about Auroville. She said, Auroville wants to be the cradle of the Superman. That was March 69.
They're here now.
We have to assume that. We have to assume that, yes.
Crowding can be disorderly too.
But the music that Sunil has written for this passage, it's so beautiful. You hear them coming down the steps one by one. There may be many of them, but it's very harmonious and very beautiful, this descent. That's how he has envisaged it. No, about this Superman consciousness. George has spoken about this, no? He says, because that consciousness has come now into the Earth atmosphere, we can all be apprentice over men. He used the term over men because Mother used the term surhomme. And he thinks it's not right to translate that exactly as Superman, that she meant the intermediary species between humanity and probably there might be several different intermediary species before the full supramental manifestation.
Jerome, is it not the mother's translation of the word Superman? Mm. Because it's not in reverse. It's not that word should be translated.
Yeah, but he also speaks. He speaks about these intermediary species also. I think Mother announced this happening to Supreme. She must have spoken in French. Surhomme was what she said, and then it has been translated. Anyway, this is a detail which should not detain us much.
So the Superman and the fallenness of the divine multitude.
More of that. That's already quite many pioneers, but they are the forerunners of a divine multitude. Many, many more are going to come. And then he describes what they're going to do, who they are, and what their different tasks. There are several different tasks. Yeah. Kayananda, would you read?
I saw them cross the twilight of an age, the sun-eyed children of a marvelous story, the great creators with wide brows of calm, the massive barrier breakers of the world, the and wrestlers with destiny in her lists of will, the laborers in the quarries of the gods, the messengers of the incommunicable, the architects of immortality. Into the fallen human sphere they came, faces that bore the immortal's glorious still, voices that communed still with the thoughts of God, bodies made beautiful by the Spirit's light, carrying the magic word, the mystic fire, carrying the Dionysian cup of joy, the approaching eyes of a diviner man, lips chanting an unknown anthem of the soul, feet echoing in the corridors of time, high priest of wisdom, sweetness, might and bliss, discoverers of beauty's sunlit ways, and swimmers of love's laughing fiery flood, and dancers within rapture's golden doors, their tread one day shall change the suffering earth and justify the light on nature's face.
Fini? Because they are wrestlers with the earliest of will.
Mm. Yes, they will wrestle with destiny and see whether they can force her to do their will. They've come out of the paths of the morning star, the star that rises before the sun rises, and they cross the twilight of an age, the end of an age of earth evolution. Now they are bringing something new, a marvelous dawn. Some of them are creators with wide brows of calm, and some of them are breakers, barrier breakers of the world. And there are those who wrestle with destiny. And destiny.
Destiny and faith. Are they the same?
They're very similar, aren't they?
I think faith has two connotations. It can either be an ill happening, coming out, or it can be destiny. To me, destiny is fixed.
Yes, that's what
some
seems.
Some people say that destiny can be changed, but I think faith can be changed, but not destiny.
But if these wrestlers are wrestling with her, they're trying to overcome destiny, no?
Or working out.
Yes, or working out destiny. Yeah. Those laborers in the next line, they are definitely working very hard to do the necessary quarrying for the new building, no?
Yeah. And they in turn become destiny.
The messengers of the incommunicable. These great souls, like Shobindo, will bring some truth that is incommunicable and communicated. And they are the architects of immortality, of the immortal state or the immortal consciousness in humanity.
But is the Shalaman architect, is the artisan also in a... in Secret of the Veda, in Ribu, the last chapter, Shobindo commentary describes what is artisan of immortality. Is artisan?
An architect is not usually the artisan, no? He's the one who conceptualizes and gives the plan. But when we use it in a more general sense, we're saying so-and-so was the architect of the Indian constitution, for example. He was the one who saw, envisaged it.
The mother said somewhere that one day man will be shown the way of immortality.
Yes.
What happened?
What has Sri Aurobindo done for us? He's shown us the way of immortality. We just have to follow it and work it out. So all these wonderful souls, they are going to walk on the earth, the suffering earth, and they will justify this light, this beautiful light that we see on the face of nature. That's not grey, that is full of faith and light. So Danya, would you read?
Although faith lingers in the high beyond, and the work is made on which our heart's hope was spent, all shall be done for which our pain was due, even as of the old man came behind the beast, this high divine successor surely shall come, behind man's inefficient mortal tale, behind his vain labor, sweat and blood and tears. He shall know what mortal mind barely does think. He shall do what the heart of the mortal could not dare, inheritor of the toil of humankind. He shall take on him the body of the gods. All heavenly life shall visit the arts of the mind of heaven shall fortify all these gods. Art deeds shall cause the superhuman fight. Art seen widening into the infinite.
Thank you. Murugan, would you just call the hostel and ask Antim to come? You can do it on the phone. Call on the phone. Take on them the burden of the gods. Yeah, the gods are the cosmic powers who are working to fulfill the divine plan. They are turned towards the light. They are not the asuras who are opposing. No, they are working to fulfill. They're the powers of light. So they have been working. Shobindo says all the human history that we know about seems to have been under the control of the gods, the overmind gods. What will happen now with this new development, with the coming of these new beings who will enter into human bodies, they will take up that work of the gods. It will become their responsibility to carry the thing further. It's so interesting, this high role that Sri Aurobindo gives to humanity. Mm-hmm. And he says, we are not unaided. In fact, everything is there to help us if we open ourselves to receive it. We'll be able to play, each of us will be able to play their own particular part in this.
I want to share something I thought was so inspiring. A person, I think it was one of the barrier breakers I saw on the BBC, this child of age 10 in Africa. All his family died of Ebola, and he himself recovered from Ebola, and he told the BBC, I want to be president.
Mm.
What a spirit that child had. He was smiling after all he'd been through.
Yes, I saw that boy. Yes.
I want to be
president.
I want to be president or a minister. He wanted to come into a position of power where he would be able to do something for the world. No, I hope he succeeds. Wonderful spirit in this child of 11. It was very striking. Yeah.
And it says here, although faith, lingers, the high.
Yes. This wonderful fate and destiny of the earth seems to be endlessly delayed, no? So that fate which will bring the fulfillment, she seems to be lingering. She's not in a hurry to come. She's in the high beyond manifestation. She hasn't yet come down. But he says, even though she seems to be lingering there, still I know that one day all this will happen. Because this is part of the close that is seeded into the beginning, no? Even as of old man came behind the beast, this high divine successor surely shall come. and
from
and then to Superman, to the Gnostic being, the spiritual being. It's bound to happen sooner or later. Surely it will happen. Yeah. And that being will take on him the burden of the gods. And then we'll begin to have these wonderful experiences. All heavenly light shall visit the earth's thoughts. The might, the power of heaven shall fortify, strengthen earthly hearts. Earth's deeds shall touch the superhuman's height. Earth's seeing widen into the infinite. So I think that's where we will stop for today.
Nature's doom.